KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Brianna Peters, thank you for bringing us on the air so smooth. This is Jim Williams with you. Thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. My friend Jennifer Bryant, Nourish Nutrition Counseling, is in studio. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Jim.
Haven't seen you for a while.
I know. It's good to be back.
I was teasing you. Saw a picture of you and your family on Facebook, and your kids are taller than you.
But very much so, yes.
Well, Claire's not quite.
Not quite. Joshua's been taller than me, though, for a few years. I wasn't expecting it to happen so soon. It was like really fast all of a sudden. So, yeah.
Well, hey, it looks like your family's doing great.
They're great. I mean, don't be afraid of teenagers. Can I just use the airtime to just say they are wonderful people?
But isn't it also true that you can, you know, go to James and say, count it all joy when you encounter trials of various kinds?
I think so.
Because your faith does get tested once in a while.
Perseverance, right?
That's right. Character building.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, none of us would give our children back.
They're great.
They're awesome.
They are.
Hey, Jennifer Bryant has all kinds of crazy initials as a registered dietitian after her name. I'm going to have her tell you about her qualifications, and then we're going to get into some nutrition questions that I think you'll find really interesting.
Yeah, cool. So I have a lot of letters. I think they actually, people think that I'm more than I am because I have so many letters. It's really not that impressive, but I will explain them. So I do have my master's degree in nutrition, which now, as of just a couple years ago, all registered dietitians are required to have a master's degree. So we all have that. And I am a RD or RDN. You basically get to choose. That stands for registered dietitian or registered dietitian nutritionist.
Does that just mean people can check you out if they want to?
They can. Yeah. So there is a national organization called the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Their website is eatright.org. It's an organization of registered dietitians across the country, where we have, you know, we adhere to a code of ethics. We have certain qualifications that we have to, you know, follow, education we have to complete, all of that kind of, you know, all of those things that you have to do to maintain your license and your registration. And so what's kind of cool about it is actually you can go on there and you can type in your zip code and you can find a dietitian near you. Mm-hmm. And so it's a nice place to just, you know, find a resource if you need one.
The reason I ask that question is because you can go online right now and you can enter in dietitian.
Yeah.
And you're going to get all kinds of stuff from people that are not really dietitians.
That's so true. I actually think that's a really good point. And I do think in terms of nutrition expertise, a registered dietitian is really kind of a step above any other, nutrition certification program. And part of that is the requirement of the master's degree. But then also we all go through at least a year long of an internship where we practice under a dietitian. And we do different areas of nutrition education, and then we sit for an exam, and then we have to keep up with our continuing education. So there's kind of a next level to a registered dietitian nutritionist compared to just someone who has a nutrition certification.
We're going to ask some cool questions, but I do want to point out to our listeners, nourishednutritioncounseling.com is Jennifer Bryant's website. If you go to resources, you can print up some of the coolest, very healthy recipes.
Love that. Yes.
And they come out on this, you can print them out and they're like an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, poke some holes in them. I know I'm a little obsessive.
I guess I
could just leave it right online, but I've probably printed 50 or 60 of them.
Sometimes when you leave it online, though, you forget about it.
Oh, yeah.
So I actually had a client this week. She said, oh, Jen, I made your... honey mustard chicken strip salad. And I was like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot about that one. And so I made it this week for my family and they all just loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think it's cool to have a loose leaf binder because then you can kind of thumb through it and you kind of, you know, if you get even 15 to 20 of them, mm-hmm. you're not eating the same thing all the time.
And there's your meal plan.
And they're very simple.
3 weeks.
Yeah. You know? And you've talked about planning before with us. We won't cover that a lot today, but when you know what you're going to make, you kind of know what ingredients you need to buy at the grocery store.
Yep.
all of the things we're going to talk about today have a basis in faith. And I want to start with, are your clients surprised that their faith in God and His word can direct their relationship with food? Mm-hmm. And I'm using your verbiage here, their relationship with food and their health.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are surprised because we don't talk about it very much in the church. And I think part of the reason for that is because there's not a lot of specific guidance in the Bible. Because, I mean, if we think about what the climate was and the culture, you know, for 2,000 to 4,000 years ago, people didn't have an overabundance of food, right? Mm-hmm. So we really are living in a different cultural moment than most of the Bible.
They and also weren't worried about getting in their steps.
That's right. That's right. There was so much labor, you know, involved in just surviving, right? So I think we don't talk about it very much. And then I also think because of that, I think a lot of people have a hard time applying what the Bible says about food and nutrition. And so that's really what I've spent the last like 8 years since I started my business. I've started digging into, okay, how do I actually help people connect their faith with food? Because I was never taught that, you know? And so I think that can be a little bit tricky, but I think there's so many principles, biblical principles that really do apply to how we eat and how we move and generally how we take care of our bodies.
I should right now ask you, you have a newsletter.
Yes.
Which is free.
Yes.
And it gives a lot of information to people. It's called Food and Faith to Fuel Your Health.
Yes.
How do our listeners receive that?
Yeah. So all of the information's on my website. So you can just go there, click on newsletter, and put your email in. I'm currently in a series called Simple Success. And I think I've really enjoyed writing it, actually, because I think a lot of people feel like changing nutrition habits is really hard. So putting that word simple in there, I think, has been encouraging to me and to a lot of other people. But that's been really fun. So what does success look like? What does the Bible say success looks like versus what does the world say? And then digging into like, what are some simple things that we can do to be successful?
Maybe you've answered this in some way, but I'll ask anyway. Does nutrition science support or contradict biblical principles?
I love that question. I don't think anyone's asked me it that way before, and I love it. The way I explain it is nutrition science tells us the what to do. The Bible tells us the how. So what are our attitudes about all of it? And the why. What are our motivations about all of it?
Oh, that now I'm glad you said motivation.
Yeah.
So if I'm just a person that, well, I think we might do this for both men and women. Women have obviously heard about eating disorders. So this would be a good example where somebody wants to lose weight, and that's kind of contradicting what God wants them to do with their body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think, you know, when I'm talking about what is our motivation, I think weight is completely the wrong motivation. To lose weight, to gain weight, whatever you're trying to do, the main goal should be, according to God's word, to take care of our bodies. And so that looks different for different people in different phases of life. It can look really different, right? And so, but I think if we can keep that goal of taking care of our bodies, then I think the rest of it will fall into place.
How many clients do you have that spend so much time on their cell phone and social media and they're seeing a body that they want to emulate? That causes some problems.
It does. And actually, I have that conversation with a lot of my clients. So we'll talk about, okay, what's coming in to your mind and being really protective. So, you know, the verse in Proverbs talking about guarding your heart, guarding your mind is similar, right? We want to make sure that we're not holding on to these goals of like what the world says we should look like or what the world says is beautiful. We want to just be really careful about that.
I'm not going to say this probably right, but I hope I do, because I have great admiration for women and the way they care for their families and their spouses.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, forgive me if I say this wrong. I observe the Bryant family. You're busy with kids in middle school, high school. You have a husband. You're cooking meals. You're doing meal planning. You're shopping. I mean, you're doing all kinds of things. And I don't know what your husband's role. Maybe he picks up some slack here and there. The point of my question is going to be not many people would have, as outsiders, would say, Jennifer is not lonely because she's always busy. But that's not true with a lot of women. A lot of women that are very busy are very lonely because they don't have connections with other women to talk about the same things we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think, and if you talk about like a holistic picture of health, it includes healthy relationships, right? So that's actually a big part of it. I always talk to my clients about really there's three points of health that we want to think about. One is physical. One is mental or emotional. And I think that's really where the relationships come in. And then the third is spiritual. And when one of those areas of health is suffering, the others do as well. And so when you're kind of taking an inventory of like, what's my overall health? I think a lot of people just think of the physical, but really we need to think about the spiritual and the emotional as well.
Jennifer Bryant is the owner of NourishedNutritionCounseling.com, NourishedNutritionCounseling.com. She provides counseling to women about nutrition and health and so on and so forth, but as you can already see, she also tries to encourage you in other areas of your life as well. Her website, NourishedNutritionCounseling.com, is a lot of free resources. I already mentioned the recipes, which I've taken advantage of. And by the way, if I can cook them... Anybody, they're simple, aren't they?
They are. Yeah. I don't have time, Jim. Like you said, I have a lot of things going on in my life.
It's very busy. We'll be back with Jennifer Bryant. We're going to talk about how much Americans spend annually on nutrition and so-called products that are healthy for you. We'll be back right after these messages. We're with Jennifer Bryant, Nourish Nutrition Counseling. Jennifer started sharing with us on this program about 7-8 years ago, and we very much appreciate her being here. She hadn't been on for a while, so we're kind of covering some ground that maybe people forgot that you've commented on in the past. How much do Americans spend annually on nutrition?
I think this is a big myth that healthy eating has to be expensive. So according to, pulled some statistics a year or two ago, and to eat a quote unquote healthy diet. So there's a couple things that describe that. So we're talking balanced, moderate, and varied. Lots of whole foods, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, all of that kind of thing. A family of four will spend about $1,000 a month. So I don't know. I'm thinking about my 15-year-old son. I think I probably spend a little bit more than that right now. Because he eats so much. But I think that's a pretty fair statistic.
Yeah.
And I think the myth comes from, I think sometimes these foods that are marketed as healthier. Some maybe gluten-free products or, specialty healthy products in quotes, right? These are not always actually healthier, but they come with a hefty price tag.
Like the proverbial fat-free,
right.
Whatever it is.
Right, right. Which, I mean, I hope at this point no one is choosing to do, all low-fat products. I think we've learned our lesson from that, but maybe there are still a few out there. But I think sometimes when you buy those specialty products, you could spend more than what you should.
Well, let's give an example. When something on the box says low fat, what that typically means is that there's way more sugar.
Often, yes. So a good example of that would be like peanut butter. So if you go look at the grocery store and you look at the low fat peanut butter, they actually add sugar to that low fat peanut butter. Whereas the regular peanut butter, doesn't have any added sugar or, it's just the peanuts and the salt. And so you want to look at the product and see if it's a better option. A lot of times with like lower fat versions of ice cream, for example, they'll add other stabilizers and things. So they're not necessarily adding more sugar to it, but some of those things are not necessarily the best for us either, right?
There was a time in history, maybe this was you were probably a little girl when this was happening, but there was a whole agenda to paint fat as bad, but healthy fat is essential.
Yeah, 100%. And I think part of that came with, it was in the 80s and 90s, and there was a push to, it was really weight loss. It's been the weight loss fads that have just come and gone, and that was one of them. So it was a low-fat fad, and what was happening was we thought, oh, well, fat is the highest calorie nutrient. It has 9 calories per gram. So if we reduce it significantly, then we'll be eating less calories and then we'll all lose weight, right? Well, what happened was we started not paying attention to the amount of calories. We just would pick low-fat products, right? So do you remember the Snackwells cookies?
I do.
So yeah. The Snackwells cookies came out and it was like, oh, they have zero fat. So instead of just eating a couple, people would just eat the whole box because they didn't have any fat, right? So they were perfectly healthy. Mm. And so then what ended up happening was people who were trying to do the low-fat diets, they actually ended up gaining weight instead of losing weight.
And adding fat to their body, right?
And adding fat to their body. And that's actually, that's a cycle that happens with almost every diet. And this is one of the big reasons why diets don't work. If we get rid of the balance in our diet and we start restricting, the body really fights back. And so we end up having cravings. We end up eating more than what we would have. The body ends up overeating and then we feel guilty about it. And so then we restrict again and the cycle just continues.
I'm going to ask you, what are some of the products people use that are absolutely not healthy? And I'm injecting one.
Yeah.
White sugar.
Oh, okay. So I would actually say, I think sugar has been over demonized. And I think part of the reason is because I do think we eat too much of it. But what I see happen a lot is people will, you know, they'll swear, okay, I'm going to start eating healthy again. So I'm going to not eat any sugar. And then what happens psychologically when we tell ourselves we're not going to eat something?
We focus on it.
Yeah. We think about it a lot. We want it all the time. We want more than what we maybe would have had, right? And so it really works against us. So I'm a big fan of everything's okay in moderation.
Paul the Apostle in Romans 7 calls that the rule giving opportunity to the flesh.
Yes, yes. And I think that happens with food quite a lot. Mm. And that's actually a good, you know, that's a biblical principle that I think we want to really keep in mind is where do we find the balance? Where do we find the moderation?
Okay, let's go from white sugar to artificial sweeteners in your coffee,
yeah.
Which 99% of the people I know that drink coffee use it.
Yeah, and I think that's a big conversation, right? Because there's so many artificial sweeteners available. One of my clients actually just sent me a couple weeks ago, there was a new study that came out on the sugar alcohol erythritol. Do you know about this one?
No.
This one's really popular in a lot of products that market themselves as keto. Mm. So erythritol it's a sugar alcohol. It's really commonly used and they've linked it to brain cell damage.
Oh, man.
And this is, you know, this is something that I've been suspecting for a little while. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know if I like people using these. So I would, you know, caution, like, don't use very much. If you're going to use it, just use a small amount.
What are the pink packs? I can't remember the name of that.
That's Sweet and Low.
Okay. So Sweet and Low, like long time ago, was linked to cancer in lab rats. Okay.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden somebody said, well, we're not lab rats.
Right.
Why can't we use it? And now it's everywhere again.
Right.
I don't get that.
Yeah. Well, I think here's the thing, right? So as humans, we're always trying to find a solution to a problem, right? Mm. The problem that we've been trying to find a solution to is that we eat too much sugar. Right.
Yes.
And so we try to come up with all of these ways where we could still feel like we're eating all the sugar without actually eating all the sugar. And so I think this is the invent of all the artificial sweeteners and the sugar alcohols.
Does your body get, I guess, I don't know, a different word. Is it addicted to sugar if you use it too much? Is it addicted to carbohydrates, which are then converted into glucose? These are things I need to know.
Yeah. I don't love that word when we talk about food, addicted,
right.
Because food is something we need, right? So it's difficult to use a word that we use like for, you know, drug addiction or alcohol addiction, where there's something we really don't need.
So maybe we could say it's habit forming.
I think that's a better word. Yeah. I think habits, they're very powerful. Habits are very powerful. So I think some people would describe it as maybe feeling addicted or maybe feeling out of control. So a lot of people will say things like, you know, well, I just love those cookies so much that I just can't keep them in my house.
Mm.
Right?
Yes.
And that's actually, so let's bring it back to the Bible for just a second. I actually think that there's probably some idolatry going on with sugar in our culture, where it's something that we love so much. We know we shouldn't be eating too much of it. It has become this idol for many of us that now we feel like we don't have any self-control around it because the idol or the food is controlling us, which is what happens with idols, right?
Yes.
And I think that can happen with, I mean, it can happen with anything, right? We're just using sugar as an example here. But I think that's something to really think about, you know, if there's something that you feel like you can't keep in the house, has that become too important to me?
Take me through a scenario. Somebody reaches out to you, nourishednutritioncounseling.com, and they want to have nutrition counseling. So they reach out to you and you start them on a program. How does that go? Are you like, do you eat a lot of sugar?
Jim, I feel like you could probably answer that. No, I do not do that.
But the reason I'm being tongue in cheek with that is because I think a lot of people, you know, it's hard enough to say, look, I probably eat too much or this or that. Mm-hmm. I've confessed to you, I'm a chipaholic. Right?
Yes.
And if you put a bag of Lay's potato chips in front of me, I mean, that their whole commercial is exactly me. You cannot eat just one. So to me, you just don't want to have that. You want to make no provision for your flesh. Mm-hmm. We don't need that in the house. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, if I do that, like if I go to a Mexican food restaurant, I'm eating two baskets of chips. It's just ridiculous. And I don't like that, but I purposely don't put myself in that situation.
Right. Right. Very often, right? So it's not a habit, right?
Right.
So I think that's an important distinction because, and here's where you start kind of talking about figuring out the behaviors, right? So are the behaviors actually problematic? If you're going to a Mexican restaurant once a month and having some chips, I would say, no, that's probably not a problem, right? So in my initial appointment with people, what we're really trying to do is we're trying to, first of all, I don't ever give people meal plans. I hate that. That doesn't tell me what you like or what you don't like or what your schedule's like or what your hunger is like, right? So there's so much room for nuance. So what I usually do is I ask people, what are they currently eating? And then what we do is we just tweak it a little bit to make it a little bit better. And we continue working in that direction. So we're constantly working on improvements, progress rather than perfection.
You shared with me something while we were walking to the studio this morning or this afternoon. You said, I'm graduating 3 people from my program. Mm-hmm. I immediately thought most counseling is designed to breed more counseling.
Uh-huh.
That's not true with Jennifer Bryant.
100%. I've actually thought about that a lot lately. Actually 2 of them that I just graduated, like it was a very sad day. Like I am really going to miss these people, you know, but it's like, you don't need me anymore. You're doing really well. You've established these habits. You've been doing them consistently for months. When we get together, you know, you might have a couple questions, but like you don't need me anymore, you know. So we always joke that when I graduate someone, that we should have a cake.
That's right. You ought to have a celebration cake.
Yeah. So yeah, I love that. I think, I mean, my goal is
a low fat, artificial sugar, gluten-free cake.
No. You know what my favorite cake is? What? The Chantilly cake from Whole Foods.
That is good.
I love that cake so much. And I have it like twice a year. Once is on my birthday, which is coming up in a couple weeks. So I'm going to get to have some of that cake.
Nice.
And then usually one other time of the year. But everything in moderation, right?
I love it. Jennifer Bryant with NourishNutritionCounseling.com. NourishNutritionCounseling.com. Lots of free resources, a lot of great information. She has a monthly newsletter that comes out that's called Food and Faith to Fuel Your Health. Is that monthly?
It's by two a month.
Two a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So every other week.
And a lot of free information. Go to NourishNutritionCounseling.com. And she provides counseling and other services as well, personal meetings, all of those kind of things. And I've recommended a few people, including my daughter, to you. And as I just stated, graduating from counseling is something that is kind of unusual in the counseling world. I'm not bashing counseling. I think counseling's great.
Yeah.
But I do think that you need people to be able to stand, get kicked out of the nest mm-hmm. kind of thing and see how they do.
For sure.
Jennifer Bryant will be with us till 2 o'clock. More to come on ABQ Connect. Probably not going to get any sponsors that sell water on this program. Jennifer Bryant with NourishNutritionCounseling.com. NourishNutritionCounseling.com is her website. A lot of free resources, a lot of great recipes, fun things that are all for free offered to the public. You can sign up for her newsletter that's called Food and Faith to Fuel Your Health. I'm going to ask you about water, ionized water, alkaline water, electrolyte water. People are spending big bucks, and now there's all kinds of concerns about the plastic that all the water comes in, but that'll be a subject for another day. What about all this water for sale? Do we need that?
I really feel like most of the time we don't. And I think, you know, just a little review of basic biology can help us with that. So the pH of the stomach is about 1.5 or 2. So alkaline water is a higher pH. And so as soon as it hits the stomach, what happens? pH goes down.
Does it go down to the level of the stomach?
Yes. And here's the thing, because that acid in the stomach is so much more powerful.
So you're talking about before the water is ever absorbed into the body, it's at a becomes a pH level that's the body's.
Yes. Yes. So I think I think there's two things. Number one, I think it's for most people, actually maybe for all people at this point, because there's really no research to back it up. Mm. I think it's a waste of money. Number two, one of the things that I've seen happening a lot in a lot of my clients and a lot of friends and family is they're having some digestion issues. And so I think part of it is happening in the stomach, where we're just not producing enough stomach acid. And so there's one step of digestion that's completely either not working right, or there's not enough acid. And we don't need to get into this here, but I think GERD medication or reflux medication, I actually think is pretty problematic for a lot of people, because we're getting rid of that first step of digestion. And alkaline water has the potential to do some damage the same way, where if it is diluting the acid at all, then you're not getting that proper digestion.
Would it be fair to say that a lot of the water that people get in their wells, or maybe even in some areas of the city, may not be the purest and may have pollutants? So purified water is not necessarily a bad idea?
Yeah. You know, I think a general filter, so like your fridge filter, change it regularly, by the way. But that can be a good help if you're
regularly, like every 3 years.
Think most of them are every 3 months. I think it's 3 to 6 months.
But that's why I'm saying that again, tongue in cheek, because I know people that haven't changed their filters in a long time.
I know. And then here's the deal, because if you don't change it regularly, there's bacteria that can build up on there, and that can actually make you sick. So some of these digestive issues that I've been seeing have their roots in just simply not changing your filter, you know? So that's a, you know, pretty easy tip, I guess, that people could take away.
Quickly, and this might be a topic for next time or time after. are plastics really creating problems, health problems for people?
Yeah, I do think so. I don't think that we should be scared of all plastic, but I think if there is an easy way to reduce the plastic you're using, I think you should do it. So for example, I carry around a stainless steel water bottle rather than plastic water bottles. When we're storing our leftovers, we store them in glass containers. We reheat food in glass containers, not plastic containers. So I think there's some of those kind of easier things that you could shift to that would be helpful.
I love that.
Yeah.
Why are diets in general typically not successful in helping people lose weight?
Yeah, there was a research study that came out back in, I think it was 2022, and it was a meta-analysis. So that means like tens of thousands of people, actually, I think it was a couple hundred thousand people were included in this analysis. And what it found was it didn't matter what type of diet people did, low carb, low fat, keto, Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, whatever. It didn't matter. At 1 year after people started that diet, they had not lost any weight. And their health parameters that they were measuring, so blood sugar, cholesterol, blood pressure, those were the three main ones, they weren't any better. So then the question is, what are we doing wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really what you're asking. Yes. What are we doing wrong? Why do diets not work? And I think that one of the biggest reasons is what we talked about earlier. When we think about what we shouldn't be eating, we want it more, right? So if we're so focused on weight loss, and again, I'm bringing it back to the Bible here, we've lost the ultimate motivation, which is taking care of our bodies. I would actually argue that most weight loss diets are not taking care of your body. And so I think that's a big piece of it. So now we're so focused on the number of the scale that we lose the motivation of taking care of our body. And then we get stuck in that cycle I mentioned earlier.
Jennifer, is there a way to cook, like using spices like turmeric, that actually help your body and reduce inflammation?
Yeah, actually, I think all herbs and spices are helpful. They all have nutrients. They all have antioxidants. I grew up in Iowa, okay? Mm-hmm. We used butter and salt to season everything, right? So I've learned, though, that there's so much more flavor to the world than just butter and salt, you know? And there's a huge benefit. I don't think, you know, talking about like, is there a magical herb or spice? I don't think so. I think it's helpful to use spices whenever we can and herbs whenever we can. And I think that generally helps with lowering inflammation.
I'm telling you right now, I could go on Facebook and on my homepage, there's going to be 5 ads out of the first 20 or 5 things on my, what do you call the wall or whatever it is?
Your feed. Yeah.
That are all going to be talking about some herb that's going to completely change your life.
Right.
And they're going to charge you a bunch of money for all that.
I mean, I think, so the question is, does it sound too good to be true?
Yes.
And so probably it is, right? Mm. There's no, you know, I actually, when I was in college and I decided to become a nutrition major, I thought when I started to study nutrition, I was going to find the magic pill. To staying thin or to a faster metabolism or whatever. That was 25 years ago, Jim. Have we found a magic pill yet?
No.
Not really.
How do we avoid the diet mentality and practice intuitive eating is your phrase?
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of intuitive eating. I actually rephrased it a little bit. Intuitive eating is a trademarked, there were a couple of dietitians back in the 80s that actually wrote a book about it. It's a great book. I would recommend it for sure. And I believe there's 10 intuitive eating principles. And I actually think that all of them line up very nicely with what the Bible teaches. So this is part of why I use intuitive eating with all of my clients and with myself. But I think intuitive eating has its roots in trusting your body the way that God made it. So you're eating when you're hungry. You're not overeating, right? And I think a lot of the diets, they place an emphasis on external things. So we're counting calories, we're counting carbs, we're counting protein, we're counting something. And so we're not listening to our bodies anymore. And so intuitive eating, and I've rephrased it to call it intentional eating, because I think that brings in that spiritual piece that we were talking about earlier.
Okay, but the NFL, for example, is going to start next Saturday. When I sit down on the couch, I might have eaten lunch 10 minutes earlier. I am going to eat something and I'm not hungry.
You got
to
have a snack.
Why? Is that just conditioned?
That's your habit. Yep, that's your habit, 100%. But what I would do, because I love a good snack at a football game, and so I'm an Iowa State fan. Mm. If anybody's listening who is an Iowa State fan, they just played in Ireland on Saturday.
Did they?
And they won.
They won.
Woo, woo, go Cyclones. That's where
So they opened up a week early.
They did, yeah, nice. Yeah. There's college football started last weekend, so... but I love a good snack while I'm watching football. That's my point. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to, first of all, this is what we did. Okay. I'm just going to tell the listeners, I'm going to be totally honest. I made a delicious spinach artichoke dip.
That sounds good.
It was amazing. And we ate, it was not healthy. Okay.
But I'm thinking there's chips involved.
There were, but here's what I did. So I balanced it. So we had chips, but we also had veggies.
Okay.
Okay. And instead of just having that snack when we weren't hungry at all, we actually made that our lunch. Mm. So we created some balance there and we planned ahead a little bit so that we would be eating when we were hungry.
I love that. Jennifer Bryant is the owner of NourishNutritionCounseling.com. You can go to her website and find many free resources, including some great recipes. Would that include the artichoke dip?
Actually, I don't think that one's on my website.
I think you're going to have to get that posted,
girl. I might
have
to, yeah.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about if what you eat or drink will affect the appearance of your skin. That's actually something that somebody emailed me after our last time we talked to you, which was quite a while ago. We'll be back with Jennifer Bryant. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. Jennifer Bryant is giving us some Nourish Nutrition Counseling this afternoon on ABQ Connect. Her website, NourishNutritionCounseling.com, is a great free resource if you're interested in things. If you are interested in her counseling program, you can reach out through that website. I want to ask you about what we eat or drink and how that might affect the appearance of our skin. Mm. I have a specific thing in mind.
Okay.
Young lady I know. Graduated from high school, got involved in hanging out at a couple bars, drinking mixed drinks, and suddenly had all kinds of blemishes and stuff on her face. After about a year, figures out, well, I shouldn't be, I'm going to try not drinking anything. After she tried a bunch of different skin treatments, and she just stopped drinking, and guess what?
Yeah, her skin looked better.
Didn't look better. It was like perfect. What happened?
Well, so I actually think that's a really good example of where sometimes we think we have to spend so much money on all these creams or all these supplements or whatever. And most of the time we don't. We just need to tweak our habits a little bit, right? So there's a couple of things. I think definitely staying hydrated is important, right? When we...
That surprises me that that's a hard thing for people to do.
Yeah, me too, Jim, just because I've always been a water drinker. Like, I mean, my mom, we make fun of
her. I mean, you
have
your bottled water right now.
I know. And my mom, I think, is listening right now. So she's going to laugh really hard about this later. But she literally carries around this blue cup with her everywhere she goes. And they'll drive 15 hours out here to New Mexico, and she'll walk in with her blue cup and it's always full of water. So I grew up just like, that's what we did.
Is she in Iowa?
She is in Iowa. Yes. So we just had water with us all the time. You know, ice water. Ice is very important.
Okay.
So we have ice water, but staying hydrated is important. And then, you know, kind of going back to something we talked about at the very beginning, but having those whole foods, fruits and vegetables. All of our different colors of fruits and vegetables have these wonderful compounds in them called antioxidants. They basically protect our cells from damage. So the damage in our skin is caused from all sorts of things. And so if we're eating a lot of these antioxidants, we can really protect
our skin. I read something the other day about alcohol, that it doesn't matter what you drink that has alcohol in it, but your body immediately recognizes it as a poison.
Yes.
And sends it to your liver.
Yes.
And then your liver is somehow responsible for metabolizing it?
Yep. Breaking it down and metabolizing it. Yes. Yeah. There's actually a specific enzyme called alcohol dehydrogenase that takes away a hydrogen molecule to make it not toxic anymore.
And this process takes like hours.
It does. It takes hours. And actually men have more of that enzyme than women, which is why the recommendation for men is 2 drinks a day and only 1 drink a day for women. I would say 0 is better.
Yeah. And I actually know some people that like drinking so much, they think they have a biblical perspective.
Right.
Maybe we got to have 1 glass of wine a day. But there's a YouTuber. She's a, I can't remember her exact title, but she's a bio something. And she's not a nutritionist. She's like a biochemist.
Okay.
Her name is Jessie Enchope. And she calls herself the glucose goddess. And she talks about metabolizing alcohol. She says, if you want to be healthy, as healthy as you can be, you should not drink alcohol, period.
Yeah.
That's what she says.
Yeah.
And that's not a moral thing.
Right.
It's a purely health related, this is what your body's doing with alcohol in your body. So I know a lot of people, and I was one of them that, you know, drank beer and I never was a mixed drink person. That was just too much. But boy, beer will put the weight on you.
Yeah.
Really fast.
Well, all alcohol. Alcohol is pretty high calorie. So we mentioned fat earlier is 9 calories per gram. Alcohol is 7.
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, it's one thing to have that as part of your life, but I know a lot of people that it sneaks up on and they do develop addictions they never planned it. But it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. There's actually, so I have a couple comments about that. Number one, there was a research study done, I think last year it was published, where they put together a couple of different diets, and it's called the MIND diet. So what they were trying to do was put together some preliminary research on how can we eat to prevent Alzheimer's and dementia. And one of the components of the MIND diet was 3 to 4 ounces of red wine. So that's like half a glass. Half a glass is all. And that was included in their overall diet for reducing dementia and Alzheimer. And there was a significant difference in the people who followed the diet versus those who didn't. So I think that just to say, I don't recommend alcohol if someone's not already drinking it. If someone's already drinking it, what I would do is I would probably shift them a little bit to doing less. So just like a half a glass, 3 to 4 ounces, and making it maybe a little more sporadic. I think that's sometimes a good way to think about it, because then you're not feeling like you have to have it, right? It doesn't become a habit, okay? There's also the second thing I would say about alcohol is it does... short term, it increases dopamine in the brain, which makes us feel good, right? After the effects of that alcohol wear off, our dopamine levels are chronically lower. So if you are in the habit of drinking all the time, you might not feel very happy if you don't have a drink. And it takes the body a little time to reset after
so,
that.
So though, if you stop drinking, and by the way, we're not on anybody's case. Look, you're saying what is best for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you've already said it, you do this in moderation or whatever. But at the same time, I'm alarmed because I just think there's a lot of people that intended to drink in moderation and somehow it took them over.
Yeah.
And I just think that we should be careful, stay away from stuff. We're modeling things for our children. Mm-hmm. And I guess I know people might be listening right now that have a drinking problem, and I want them to have hope that you can stop drinking and you are going to feel a lot better. So will your body adjust and renew itself?
Yes. Yes. 100%. It does depend a little bit on how long the person has been drinking and how much. Mm. So I have seen some cases, and this actually happens more with drugs rather than alcohol, but I have seen some cases where in order for someone's brain chemistry to really normalize, they really just need a medication after they've been on a particular drug or alcohol for an extended period of time. But I would say for like most people, 90% of people, it does normalize and your body really does heal. And that's true with food too. If you've been eating a, you know, not so healthy diet for a long time, your body can heal itself. That's actually, it's actually really amazing what the body can do. So I think that's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about what I do. If you can work towards small improvements, the body heals itself.
I think you're going to have a whole maybe 2 minutes. Brianna, I don't know how much time we have, but I'm giving you this as a question. Is there evidence that supplements are helpful to our health? Because we spend a lot of money on supplements.
We do. I looked up a statistic earlier today that Americans, and this was actually back in 2023, I think was the statistic, so it might be even more than that now. We spend $35 billion on supplements a year. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
So the answer, I think, is very nuanced. I think we spend more than we need to. But I do also think some supplements can be helpful for certain people. Okay. An example, one thing that I do recommend for most of my clients is a really good quality multivitamin. Okay. And there's, you know, mixed opinions about that. But that's one thing I really think can be helpful on days where maybe you eat too many chips and you don't eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. You know, having some good, like a good backup is a nice option. And then the other area where I do use them that I think are helpful is when I'm working with somebody specifically on healing their digestive system. So there are a couple of specific supplements that can be really helpful. I'll give you one example. When there is an overgrowth of some of the bad bacteria, okay, some antibacterial herbs have been shown to be just as effective as antibiotics.
Mm.
So that would be an example where if I see someone has an overgrowth of that bad bacteria, I would probably recommend doing some antibacterial herbs for a short time. So it's usually not a lifelong thing. It's usually a short-term commitment. And then when the digestive system's healed, they can keep it that way with a healthy diet.
How long does a typical counseling program take when people work with you?
I would say I probably have people on average for 6 months to a year.
Okay. And again, I'm excited that you graduate people.
I am too.
And then they're on their own.
Yes.
How's the follow-up? I mean, we talked about early about, you know, fellowship concerns. People that are very busy sometimes are the loneliest people because they look like they're surrounded with people and they're really kind of isolated.
Yeah.
So how do you keep people in fellowship and talking? And because that's really part of their health.
Yeah. So while I'm working with them, I do make sure that they have a good support system. And those people that are their support system, you know, they don't graduate from those people, right?
Right.
So I always tell them, you know where I am. If you feel like you need me again, you can always reach out. But you have these great people that are supporting you, and that's really helpful.
More information available at nourishednutritioncounseling.com. Jennifer, thank you for joining
us. Thanks, Jim.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.